The theater. The theater.
Bring out Louis.
Theater. Theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater. Theater.
Hey.
How y'all doing?
Good.
Hey.
We're here for season four.
Yeah, we're in it. Now we're in it.
It's time.
You're in. Mm-hmm. Hold on to your butts or mouths, y'all. Mm-hmm.
Well, those are the same thing,
they're, yeah, it's the same thing. We're bringing it back.
There's something I wanted to... Season four, we're bringing it back. Mouths and butts are the same thing. If you don't know, listen to our back catalog. Or just, you know, Google it. So... I wanted to mention this. Today I found something really interesting. You can hear it here. This is a quarter, okay? It's a 2022 quarter, brand new, real pretty, real shiny.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
George's hair looks kind of new and refreshed. You know, it's a little bit different design.
They
almost
powdered the wig, if you will.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Huh?
The ponytail looks a little more phallic than usual, I will
say. Little Mermaid,
yeah,
show
little
poster
mermaid,
feeling.
Yeah.
It's very that. But on the other side is something kind of incredible that I didn't know existed, and I just researched it, and it's really cool. It's a picture of Anna May Wong, the actress.
Huh.
Right on.
And it's beautiful, and it says Anna May Wong. Quarter dollar e pluribus unum. Now, they only made 300 million of these, which probably means it's not worth the shit, but maybe one day it'll be worth something. So I'm holding on to this because this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But we've talked about Anna May Wong on this podcast. She came up a couple times. I think it was both times Keela Packett was here, actually.
Mm-hmm.
One time was when we were discussing David Henry Hwang. He's currently writing her biopic, which is what CJ just found on the internet, which
nice.
Is super cool.
Starring
Gemma Chan.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Of Eternals fame.
Yes.
Rules, and I think she's producing it as well. And then we also brought her up on the Rodgers and Hammerstein episodes, the miniseries, because she was supposed to be in the Flower drum song movie, got sick, didn't do it, and then passed away soon after.
Right.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. I just wanted to throw that out there.
This is your quarter podcast, everybody.
Yeah. She was groundbreaking. I mean, she was groundbreaking.
Welcome to Quarters with Quarters.
Welcome to Quarters Quarters.
Today we're going to talk about Quarters.
No, this is not what this is. This is Theater Theater, and I'm excited to talk about it. Now, I'm going to introduce the pod in a second, but I want to... throw this out there as well. I'm sorry to hog this episode.
Podcast hog.
I'm a podcast hog. I'm a hogcast.
Mike Hog.
New hogcast. I like that.
Hogcast.
I might be debating myself currently. I'm having a debate currently with my own mind about something a hill that I've honestly died on many times on this podcast and otherwise. The name of this podcast is Theater Theater, and it's spelled two different ways, R-E and E-R. Now, I have always maintained that R-E is the art form.
Is the
and
art form.
E-R is the building.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, this is shifting for me slightly.
What?
I have noticed almost every single major theater... on the planet that use English, okay, is called the National Theater, T-H-E-A-T-R-E, Pasadena Playhouse State Theater, T-H-E-A-T-R-E. Then there are also places that call themselves Theater Company, where they also spell it R-E. I'm starting to shift. I'm starting to think, hold on, I'm starting to think R-E... might be everything related to the art form theater, including the building, the companies, the everything. And theater, E-R, is like a movie theater.
Now, No, because what about the AMC?
Oh, shit. CJ's saying no.
In City Walk, they spell it T-H-E-A-T-R-E. We've noticed that as you walk in. But it's a movie theater.
Okay, then that negates that too. Maybe it's only R-E. Maybe we delete the spelling E-R. Maybe we go full
pretentious. We reject it.
We reject E-R because that's what the American journalists have all decided to use collectively so that they don't misspell it, right? Because nobody could decide on, and they were like, well, let's just do one, and it's this one, and this is Americanized, and we're doing it.
Spell favorite with a U, then.
Yeah, color with a U.
Yeah, come on.
Hey. Yeah.
Welcome to Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds, made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Burcham.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
That's right. And each week we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various projects and lenses. And this week is a CJ's pick. Well, CJ, what did you choose for our first episode of season 4?
Well, I wanted to get everyone, all of our listeners involved, and have y'all send in stories for your favorite theater experiences, whether that was being a part of it or witnessing it.
Yeah. And why did you choose it?
I just want to, I'm having a hard time coming up with stuffs, to be honest. And I just keep playing back the conversation we had last season or so about you saying, like, guys, we got to stop just coming in with movies the whole time. Can we try and, like, think up some other things? So that was also my attempt to not just bring in another movie.
I appreciate that. I do. Yeah. It really, the point was, is just that, like, I love watching movies and I love discussing movies as a form of theater and entertainment, right?
Right.
But there's so many ways to dissect the word theater and the definition of theater.
Mm.
And like we talk about politics being theater a lot, mm-hmm. right? So I think this season is about expounding that and really testing those boundaries of what theater is. And this is a great way to start it. So I appreciate you, CJ. I do.
Yeah. Thanks for doing it with me, y'all. I've loved the write-in when we did theater disasters or nightmares.
Oh, that was fun. Theater Nightmares.
It was a lot of fun.
We're doing Theater Nightmares Part 2 this season, by the way. It's already on the books.
So good.
Get your theater nightmare stories ready because it's basically the antithesis of this episode. This is what I'm calling earth-shattering theater experiences.
Yep.
Now, I told people they could do what they saw, what they've been in, what they've whatever, but I think we kind of meant it to be more specific, or like CJ wanted it to be more specific at one point, and I fucked that up, so I apologize.
No. Either way is great.
Okay.
I just love sharing with y'all.
And I love y'all.
Aww.
Love you, Max.
Well, let's get into it. Let's start reading these things, right?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
This is exciting. Okay, so we got a bunch of write-ins, and I figure let's just read them. We don't know all these people, so we tried to find as much information as possible on everybody based on their Instagram, because that's where we got most of our write-ins. But if we got something wrong, let us know. Or if you sent something in and we missed it, definitely let us know.
Yeah.
And we'll figure it out. We'll say it next time or something, okay? Because I think I've been, like, talking to a couple people over the DMs and then, like missed their story. I've, like, I don't know. We'll see. Let's get into it.
So first we have Sophia.
Hi, Sophia.
Sophie.lia on the grams.
Sophie Leah, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, nice. Sophie Leah. Like it. Sophia is a feminist and a traveler, and she follows the pod. And based on her IG, she is way cooler than any of us can ever hope to be. And that's all we know.
That's right. She has a really cool Instagram. Sophia's awesome, but that's all we know about her. So go ahead, CJ, read her thing. Now, I did not edit these.
Okay.
So if there's a typo, it's not on me this time. Okay.
Listen, I'm a great cold reader. Please, somebody represent me. All right. Sophia writes, I recently attended a performance of Tony Kushner's Angels in America, produced by the amazing Simon Stone at the Residence Theater Munich, and was blown away by it. The stage was designed in a way where several scenes would happen at the same time, really adding up and delivering on the tension, which builds up during the forward movement of the plot, creating a raw moment of emotion despite not being able to clearly make out the text with it overlapping.
Mm.
It was also my first time experiencing a play that includes nudity and erotic scenes, and I was just awestruck by the attention to detail and the ability of the actors to perform in situations where additional layers of stress are placed on you. Altogether, a mind-blowing performance.
Yes. Thank you, Sophia.
So cool.
Yes.
That would be a really interesting way to watch that play. I wonder what the runtime was. So if they were overlapping scenes and happening at the same time, and also depending on part one, but both parts are, what, 2.5 to 3 hours? They're lengthy for sure.
It's usually two nights of theater, yeah?
Well, the script is already sort of written that way. I think it's more of like the way it was designed, it was able to flow a lot quicker than if they were like,
there you go, there you go, that makes sense,
between lighting design or something like that,
right?
But that's kind of interesting.
I have a question, and it's only because I've only ever seen the HBO thing and I've read it a couple times. Does anyone ever do part one without part two, or do they have to go together?
I've often seen part one done by itself.
Yeah, it'd be kind of weird to do. The ending is such a blue ball.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you'd be like, fuck, okay, now I need to know four
what
more
the hell
hours
that
of
was.
Information. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
which is kind of the beauty of it. Now, I've talked about, I think Angels might be my favorite play.
I got excited when I saw the title.
Yeah, but it goes between that and August Osage County, where I'm just like, these are my plays. I really love them. Angels Rules, I saw it recently in a black box where I was just like bathing in the script and there was no sets or costumes or anything. I was like, this rules, I don't care. And I sat there for 8 hours and listened to the whole thing.
Yeah, right.
This show is incredible. It's the most theater of theater. And I think that's why I love it so much.
It is. And it's so big in its scale and its theatricality and its supernaturalness. And then so utterly intimate at the same time. All those stories that you're following are so personal and so they get under your skin so quickly. And it's a miraculous achievement. It really is.
Yeah, we covered Tony Kushner in season one of his podcast, old school. It was like it was before we were breaking up the mini series, and
yeah, we were trying to discuss
like 5 hours.
All of his stuff. We did it all.
We ended up talking for like 5 hours, so we did break it into 2 episodes. That was the first time we broke something into multiple episodes because we were like, damn, nobody's gonna listen to this fucking 4.5 hour episode.
Yeah.
But we just went in on it, and that was when we were really raw, and we didn't really know what we were doing yet. But
yeah,
that's okay.
No. Yeah. I mean, that's literally why we did it. The lockdown was happening. We had something to learn. Like, we learned a lot.
Yeah.
We learned a lot about ourselves and each other.
And Tony Kushner.
Yeah,
Tony Kushner. I also thought it was really interesting. She said she had never experienced a play that included nudity or erotic scenes on stage.
Yeah.
Now, I know all three of us experienced a lot of that on stage from college and beyond. And so I was almost like, wait, really? When I read that. But then I was like, no, it's not always in stuff. I've just seen Equus 3 times. That's the
problem. Right.
But I wanted to bring up that I've said this on the pod before, but I did a few months doing a casino run of Full Monty. And have been naked on stage, and it is truly like one of the most freeing experiences. Like once you've done it, it's just like, oh, okay, I never have to like worry about my body image again. And I know that's not it for everybody. Was it for me, because I was also treated really well in the process, and the cast was really great, and she said attention to detail, that, you know, you have to when you're dealing with people's
right
bodies in general,
yes.
But also the insecurity that comes with all of that, especially in the theater world. And I was lucky enough to be super nude 8 shows a week for months and months.
We did a topless musical comedy called Titty Bar, and I'd never ever done any kind of nudity on stage and was nervous as fuck about it, but knew like, well, if I'm gonna do this, I have to do it, and I have to go 110% at it. And I can honestly say, even though that show was wrought with a lot of drama, but the very act of doing that and to keep doing it and to have it be received well, it really unlocked something for me as an actor. Mm-hmm. So yeah, something really clicked in. Listen, everyone, go out there and show your titties on stage. It will unlock something in your creative
for all of us.
For all of us.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was one of my earth shattering, and it sounds like for you too, Siege, like one of my big earth shattering theater experiences was just being naked.
Yep.
Being super naked.
Being vulnerable.
Yeah, I've only shown my ass on stage, but then I did an independent film where I had to be naked as the shot opened up, like from behind. But I did it with a room full of people that I'd been literally living with as we shot this low budget film. Like we were staying at people's parents' houses and running around. So it'd been like 2 months. And then it's like, hey man, you got to get naked in front of everybody in this room and we're going to shoot you. We're going to take pictures of it. And like, that was like one, like literally like the director standing there, like lighting a joint, giving me a joint going, you just need to be a little high. You'll be fine. But it was freeing. Oh, shit. You'll be fine. No, everybody was very kind and very professional. But yes, it's so liberating, isn't it? Just show your junk. Just show your stuff.
Show your junk. Everyone needs to show their junk.
Bring back Namor's junk, y'all.
Namor's junk.
Aw, release the junk cut. Release also, the junk cut. I saw a movie last night. I saw a movie last night called Infinity Pool with Alexander Skarsgård, and it was phenomenal. It was a Brandon Cronenberg film. But apparently at Sundance, they screened an NC-17 version of it.
Ooh.
I did not see that version because they're not showing it in theaters right now. So I'm going to try and find it. In the NC-17 version, the only difference is that you get a lot of Alexander Skarsgård hog.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And
Which I hear is
hog.
Quite extraordinary.
That's the thing. Well, it's a Skarsgård hog.
It's a Skarsgård hog.
You know who else had a big hog?
Who?
His dad.
Jim Jones.
Don't taint this with your cult shit.
With your filthy cult
Don't taint
knowledge.
This with your cult taint.
Don't taint, taint it with your taint. Don't say it.
Scott, why don't you read the next one? This is a deep friend of the pod who has communicated with us before over DMs and such. Why don't you explain who this is?
Absolutely. This is Chris Richardson. He is at the Cap 01. That's Cap with a K, THEKAP 01. On the Instagram. Chris and I used to work together years ago. As a matter of fact, he was my trainer when I came in and joined the company. And like within 15 minutes, he dropped like 20 different pop culture references from all over the place, from musicals to Buffy the Vampire Slayer to Star Wars, like just dropping them all. And so immediately I was like, this is my guy. Like, I'm going to team up with him. But he's one of the kindest people you ever want to meet. He's one of the smartest people you ever want to meet. He came to see Three Guys, One Groupon, and drank with us at the Plunge during Fringe. And he's just a marvelous person.
We love you, Chris.
We love you, Chris. Thank you. And thank you for sipping your tea and listening to the podcast
and
on
posting
Instagram
about us.
And
yeah,
posting
we love
about
that.
It. Yeah.
It's always me saying the dumbest thing, though. He always posts, like, I'm always like, wow, I sound so stupid in that moment. I love you, Chris, but I sound dumb.
This is a great story. This is a great story. Chris writes, I was 10. My mom took me to see Carol Channing in Hello, Dolly. I'd seen other music.
Carol Channing in Hello,
Carol
Dolly?
Channing. Carol Channing. I'd seen other musicals, but that moment of seeing her descend the stairs at the Harmonia Gardens is the most incredible, and the most incredible red dress I'd ever seen. The world looked different after that performance. It shook me to my 10-year-old core. To borrow from, but I'm a cheerleader, it was my root.
Yes, but I'm a cheerleader is a phenomenal old film with Natasha Lyonne about gay conversion.
It's
camp.
A gay conversion camp. And
but they all just fuck each other. It's great.
And it's really great. And it's also a big shout out. She's got this new show on
Poker Face.
Face on Peacock.
It's
and,
like Columbo.
Yeah. And Ryan Johnson
is the producer,
and brainchild behind it. But it's awesome to see Natasha Lyonne with a cool resurgence going on.
When we do the original, when we go back to doing musicals that are movies, I am going to make us sit down and watch the Barbara Streisand Hello, Dolly, because
It's great.
It's a good one.
Louis Armstrong
in that movie. Oh,
Walter
Matthau.
Yeah.
Walter
Matthau
Crawford.
Getting all the dance moves wrong and not singing on key.
No.
We love Matthau. We stand a legend.
Crawford.
Michael Crawford.
Oh, yeah.
Who will we be talking about
doing? Phantom of the Opera, yeah. He also played Barnum in the original Barnum, which is another one of my earth-shattering theater experiences when I played Barnum in seventh grade and was the first time I was like, oh, I could, this is fun. Maybe I like this.
Oh.
Maybe I like theater, yeah. Okay, Rachel Mannheimer at @rabbit_mangosteen, deep friend of the pod. She's a local stage manager and theater technician. Yep.
And we love awesome Rachel. And a badass.
One of the coolest people I've ever known. She wrote in something kind of slight, but I it's really worth reading. Seeing / working on An Oak Tree by Tim Crouch. He creates space for the imagination to do heavy theatrical work. People saw things occupying two realities at once. Pure theater of mind.
Wow, ooh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, that sounds super fucking cool. So he's just like a British experimental theater maker. I don't know a ton of his work, but
I just know the name. I know that he does some wacky weird stuff, but that sounds cool.
Tim Crouch, would love to see some of his work. Okay, next up. Thanks, Rachel. We love you, Rachel.
Yes. Yeah,
absolutely.
This one's pretty cool.
Yeah, we from Hammond Chamberlain at J-H-A-M-M.
J Hammond C.
J Hammond C. Pardon me.
Yeah.
And that's Hammond with two M's. Podcaster, producer, musician, host of Beyond the Playlist with J Hammond C, a podcast where he interviews blue-collar and independent musicians and artists of all kind. That's a really good idea
for a great
podcast.
Yeah, it's kind of rad.
God's work.
I just subscribed to it. I haven't listened to it. But he also just messaged that he found us through a musical theater podcast, which is the Jeff Parsons podcast that I was on where I talked about Taboo.
Oh,
so super cool to get someone crossover from that pod. That's a you know, one of our sister podcasts. So that's awesome. Thanks, Hammond. So what did Hammond write?
Earth shattering. I stage managed for years. One of the best experiences was opening night of 1776. It was a semi-pro production, but calling go on that downbeat was electric. Something about that show and when we did it was important. Late September 2001. Wow.
Semi-pro, yeah. I guess, means regional theater or like lower than?
Semi-pro.
It could be, you know, a community theater can sometimes hire equity actors for special things. And
yeah,
you can do all kinds of that depending on where you are in the country. But yeah, I can see that. You know, people talk about 1776 and there's all kinds of revisions of it, all female casts, you know, all POC casts. It's awesome that what you can do with it and reimagine it. But there was something when I saw it live about an all male chorus singing together, boom, especially that opening number, which is so just nicely paced and energetic and all that. Yeah, I can imagine that being a pretty electrifying experience for sure.
Especially, he says the time was late September 2001. Yeah. So, you know, it's probably post September 11th. And they
patriotism in this country.
Yeah, they hit that downbeat.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that just, I mean, patriotism at its highest, maybe, of the last however many decades. And I do feel like this show, I love the movie. I really love the movie.
I've seen
the show a few times and I'm always a little disappointed. Mm. And I think it's just the shows I've seen. I don't think it's the show. I think it's that I go and I'm always a little like, yeah, okay, we get it. But that second act, that 45-minute scene where they're just all in the room voting.
Mm. Are we watching someone count the votes as they come in? Scott's favorite thing.
Yes.
But it's like a 45-minute scene. And it's like the longest musical theater scene ever or something. Hmm. I think still to this day, I think it's still the longest. Kind of interesting.
Really?
We love 1776 on this podcast. Okay, next up, Scott. This is Louis Rinaldi. Tell us about
Louis Rinaldi, friend of the pod.
Louis.
Louie and I have only met one time, and we got drunk as hell at, at Fringe and had an insane, amazing conversation. So
Louie and I have run into each other many, many times. In fact, we ran into each other at the birth center one time when I was leaving from an appointment at the birth center before the baby was born. And
wow. Louie
was like, what are you doing here? I was like, what are you doing? Anyway.
No, so awesome. Louie Rinaldi at Louie Just Louie, all one word, all lowercase, at Louie Just Louie on the IG. He's the co-writer of Fuck Julie, which was one of our nominees for
Best
Playwriting
so
at the Fringe.
Yeah, it was one of our Fringe Playwright Award nominees, but it was phenomenal.
It was so
phenomenal
cool.
Script, yeah.
Yeah. And so Louie writes, People, Places, Things at St. Anne's Warehouse in New York. And when the four walls of Scrim drop in the first scene transition, taking us from a production of The Seagull into a nightclub directly into a rehab center, it felt like falling directly into the protagonist's head.
Ooh.
So cool. Also, David Cromer's Our Town at Barrow Street, when Emily is brought back home, and in this black box off-Broadway production, the whole back wall curtain reveals a full two-story home. So this, the wall opened up. The first real props of the play, complete with working fire stove, cooking the bacon, and snow falling down. Like, that felt like some real theater magic. I guess for me, earth-shattering equals unexpected.
It definitely sounds like a production that had all of God's money to make it look cool.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah.
Earth-shattering does equal unexpected scene changes, Louie.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When you can pull off something super crazy and awesome and sometimes very simple, like it goes a long way. But yeah, I love it. I love it for sure.
This next one is from someone who is a follower of the pod and has commented a couple times and done something, but I couldn't find a lot of information on him. This is Alejandro Murillo or Murillo. And it's at Fugitivo 5, F-U-G-I-T-I-V-O 5, the number 5. He's like a photographer, documentarian, YouTuber.
Awesome.
What's up, Alejandro? What's up, man?
Yeah, bro.
Thanks for listening.
Yes.
So Alejandro wrote in and he said, I once saw a production of The Maids on a rooftop cleaning room in Mexico City. Retitled All That One Actress Need Is a Good Text by Vaca 35 Theater Company. Okay, All That One Actress Need Is a Good Text.
Yeah.
Good. First act was the play, and then second act, no intermission, was the actresses playing two actresses reviewing each other's work, having a food fight that they cooked on stage, and then finally going to sleep. It was, in all caps, amazing.
Wow.
Wow.
That does sound amazing.
The Maids is nuts. The Maids
is nuts, but this sounds great.
That sounds awesome. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I love the idea of any space being a theater. If you told me, like, hey, we're having a play in my living room, it's a 10-seat house, I'd be like, holy shit, I'm there.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is from Jenna Grace _ D. It's Jenna with two N's. Choreographer and high school theater and dance teacher in Houston. Hi,
yeah,
Jenna.
In front of the pod. Jenna is a dear friend of mine and also choreographed Runaway Clone.
Oh, okay.
Which
okay.
was a Fringe, actually Forerunner that year.
Yeah.
It was a really good musical we did years ago. That at Sacred Fools.
I think Scott and I saw that together.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that we did.
Written by Pam.
Hi, Pam.
Pam Quinn, is a frequent contributor to our podcast, and also directed by me.
Yes.
And then choreographed by Jenna. You both have met Jenna many times. She was at this previous Fringe and drank with us.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Hi, okay. Jenna.
Hi, Jenna. Thanks for writing in. Right. When I was in high school, we were doing the play Noises Off, and right when one of our actors was climbing through the window, he got stuck and caused the whole entire two-story set to fall toward the audience.
Oh, no.
I don't know that is earth-shattering, but it was scary.
Holy
that shattered my earth. Just
yeah. Then. Oh, my God.
You know, it's almost more of a theater nightmare, which we are doing another episode of later, but we didn't specify whether this was a positive earth-shattering
experience. Yeah, no, it could be earth-shattering, you know?
So that's legit. Noises Off, though, is one of those plays where I feel like it could happen and you could keep playing.
Make it work. That's all you do. You make it work.
You just start walking on the back of the set.
The happy accidents, you know, are so amazing.
It's like I was in this play years ago in Thousand Oaks called Inspecting Carol.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on like the Inspector General or some shit, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things where they're putting on a play. They're trying to change it so much that when they actually do put it up, it all falls apart and none of them really know what's going on. My point is it can fall apart and no one knows because that's the whole point of the play.
Right.
And so one night I completely blanked on my lines in the middle of one of the scenes where I was playing Scrooge. And I was just like, fuck, I don't know. What is this? And so I just started yelling stuff to the stage manager to get them to change cues until it got to something I knew. But it like worked. And like, next one. Next one. I got there and I was like, okay, that one. And then I just kept going with the show. But everyone else backstage was like scrambling, trying to figure out where I was.
Right.
There were so many quick changes and stuff.
Oh my God, I'm getting hives just hearing this story.
Theater nightmare.
I have something similar to this that had a happy ending.
Okay.
I work with a gal. Her name's Michelle Gardner. I do choreography with her. And every once in a while, we do this thing called lip sync sign. And it is a dance with sign language mixed in. And one year, we choreographed to CeeLo Green's Fuck You. And we were doing it for back in the day when we used to have the late night show Serial Killers. At the end of the night, there would be performances while we were waiting for the audience votes to be counted. And so we did this dance number, and it was packed that night, and the music starts, and we're going, and it's going really great. And then somewhere, like at the end of the first chorus, the music completely cuts.
Mm.
And we stopped. And everything stopped in the theater and it was quiet. And this was also at the point of the night where everyone in the audience just wants to pee and get out on the street and smoke a cigarette. So we're also holding everyone hostage. So we look up at the sound guy. He's scrambling. He feels bad. And then Michelle and I made an agreement and I yelled out to the audience. I was like, does everyone here know this song? And then the audience yelled back, yes, we do. So I said, great. We're starting at the top of the second verse, and I'm going to count you in 5, 6, 7, 8. So I counted everyone in 5, 6, 7, 8, and we finished the entire dance with the audience singing all the music for us.
It's
out there on YouTube somewhere, and it's one of my favorite mistakes that actually ended up even better.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's
radical. Radical. Okay, this is from our dear friend of the pod, though none of us have ever met him.
Mm.
He's a theater artist and listener to the podcast, and he's written in with questions and comments many times before, and we've talked about him. His name's Austin Almond.
Hi, Austin!
Yes, Austin!
At Almond Austin on Instagram. And he wrote in something kind of specific that's, again, it's amazing that earth-shattering means different things to different people.
Sure.
So let me read this to you. My story is not about a show, but a multitude of opportunities. To start, in high school, I was verbally abused by my theater teacher.
What?
He told my dad, it's a shame that Austin loves theater because he has no talent for it.
Oh,
fuck. Awful.
He says, needless to say, I have some PTSD from that. Yeah, it makes
sense.
Totally,
yeah.
Which, you know, we talk a lot. This is Bailey talking now. We talk a lot about educational theater culture and theater culture in general. Mm-hmm. And it is something that is unfortunately so sadly normalized in theater culture, is this idea of like, well, I'm just being real so that they don't waste their time. And it's like, no, don't.
You gotta grow a thick skin.
Yeah, shut the fuck up. Because there are people who never booked anything through high school and college who went on to be massive stars. There's this woman whose name I'm gonna have to look up, and I'll find it. It's Joyce something another. And she never booked anything in all of her years of opera school. She never booked anything. She couldn't book it. She never got a part, She became like the most recorded mezzo in history.
Hmm.
Like 4 years ago or something. Yeah. So it's like, you just shut the fuck up about that shit. Drama teachers, you're a drama teacher in a high school.
Faye Dunaway.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Faye Dunaway is another one. She had a college acting teacher told her she should just quit. She was never going to make it. And then she sent him a thank you card the night she won the Academy Award.
Yeah.
Like, thank you, because you know.
Thanks, dick.
Yeah, right. Asswipe.
Love it.
But then also, like, the to say, like, you have no talent for theater is insane, because theater is not just acting. Theater is so many things. Theater is a million different things. It's writing, it's directing, it's acting, it's behind the scenes, it's tech work, it's costume design, it's a thousand different art forms put into one. That's why we love it so much. Anyway, then he says, 2 years after graduation, I went to a local theater to work sound for a musical. I have worked on countless plays and musicals at this theater. The best part is when the theater staff gave me a cupcake for my birthday during my first show there. Mm. It was then I knew that this was going to be my second home, and it has been going on 7 years.
Aww. That's great.
And he's hitting the heart of this, right? Which is that there's a drama, there's this drama school, there's this drama teacher high school arrogance of bullshit, where they like to, you know, put you in your place or whatever, but you can find a home in theater anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone can find a home in theater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And although I sometimes preach against the idea of, like, it's just a, like, I don't like the, I don't always love the idea of, like, it's a home for misfit toys, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think that's really what I mean here. What I really mean is, it is a home for anybody who wants to be here and who loves it and who wants to make good shit. And there are a lot of people who sort of pretend like theater is their home because they have friends who do theater and they're in the community, but are they really making it a home? Are they really making their home better? Are they doing the dishes and making good art? You know what
mm-hmm,
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. I just had
doing
to say
the
that.
Dishes and making good art. I like that.
That's my new motto. I also wanted to shout this out. He sent us something a few days later that is about the fact that he lives very near Memphis. He's about a half hour drive from Memphis. So he said he's about 30 or so minutes from where Tyree Nichols was murdered by Memphis police. And he said it's been tough here, but the Memphis theater scene has come together in an uplifting way. Many of the productions canceled their performance in order to allow the three all African American productions to get spotlight.
Wow.
And then he said, I am in awe of my theater community out here.
Way to go,
and I
Memphis.
Am too, Austin. I just got choked up.
Bravo.
I am. That's exactly what needs to be happening.
If
we're going to talk about community, if we're going to talk about theater being a home, being a community, there's no competition in theater for me. It doesn't matter what another theater company is doing. They could be doing the exact same show as you. It's going to be a different show.
Right.
So we might be competing to get butts in seats, but that's not competition against other people. Mm-hmm. That's competition against ourselves and the masses, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's exactly what theater should do. And that's so heartening to hear that in a time of such pain and such rage, justifiable rage, that a group of theaters would come together and go, hey, let's take a time out. Let's put our energy here where it can do more good and where it can reflect what's happening a little bit in the moment. Sometimes theater can't respond in the moment. You know, there's a little bit of preparation, you know, improvisation obviously can, but to be able to do that, here, right on, bravo, right on. Thanks for sharing, Austin.
Yeah, what a great write-in.
Do you guys have any other stories you want to throw out there? Any other earth-shattering experiences that y'all have had? Those are the only ones that were write-ins. So if you are someone who's listening right now and you're like, oh, I wrote in, send it to me and I will read it next time. Or if you have one and you didn't get time to send it in and you want to send it in, send it in.
We'll make it happen. Stuff on the show.
Yeah. We'll make a little earth-shattering theater experience corner at the end of every episode.
Ooh,
yeah.
Need a new stinger. Earth-shattering theater experience. Yeah, it's got to be like a guitar lick thing.
I I just wanted to repeat one of my stories recently because it just came up again. And that's seeing the Layman trilogy a few months ago, right before it won all the Tonys and all that. But it was this great day. I went with my friend, Patrick Duffy, who's a friend of the pod. And, you know, I've known the dude for 15 years and he's a playwright. And we went on the final performance, the final matinee performance of that show. And I've repeated this again and again. If you were to tell me that one of the most earth-shattering theater moments I would see would be a play about the rise and fall of a bank over the course of 100 years, like, I would be like, what? And how utterly theatrical. Like, I couldn't even think about how you would make a film of it. It wouldn't do any good. That you had three performers playing all of those characters, and that ethnicity didn't matter. In this case, I saw three men, but you could easily do three women or two women and one man, and or any combination therein. And that it was so utterly theatrical and so utterly simple and beautiful and elegant in its design and execution. And your jaw is on the ground through the whole fucking thing. Just one of the best experiences I had. And Patrick and I bumped into each other talking, and he's like, I keep thinking about that fucking show. And I'm like, I know, right? Like, you can't get it out of your head. So those are the ones, those magical experiences.
Many moons ago, I saw friend of the pod, Michael Shaw Fisher's Exorcistic, which was a 60-minute long rock musical parody of The Exorcist. And it always, I mean, the show is fucking great. And it stuck with me because The Exorcist, I saw it when I was 18 and didn't sleep for a week. So, like, that movie has always stuck with me. And then the gal that played the little girl, Laura Speraza, who was also in Beaver Quest at Fools, but she's one of the performers that I've seen twice. And every time she's one of my favorite people I've ever seen on stage before. Anyway, Exorcistic blew my fucking mind. And then lo and behold, 2 weeks ago, I was invited by Michael Shaw Fisher to record background vocals for their studio album that they're releasing of Exorcistic this year. So full circle. It was awesome.
Very cool.
Yeah, I urged him against it when he asked if I thought that you could, you know, do that if you were reliable.
Fuck you.
No.
In the words of Brian Cox, fuck off.
Fuck off.
I saw a production of Heisenberg at the Taper Forum. It's a play with just two people. It's written by Simon Stevens, who also wrote Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night.
Yes.
But he wrote this play called Heisenberg that's only two people, and it was Mary Louise Parker and Dennis Arndt.
Your favorite.
Forget it.
And I had seen Dennis Arndt as Lear. No, it wasn't Lear. It was Prospero. One or 2 years before at Oregon Shakespeare Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was already excited about him, but then I'm a huge Mary Louise Parker fan. Hell yeah, I gotta go see this. I bought tickets. They set it up where it was an alley stage, so there were audience on both sides.
I love that.
Though they lowered
it.
The stage. So I sat on stage, but not on stage because they had lowered the stage, right? So their stage was just an alley strip in between two half circles of audience, right? And there was no set. There was just a table. And they would walk back and forth and have conversations on this table. And it was a bed and it was an all these things, but it was just a big table, white table, looked like a folding table. I was like second or third row. They kept spitting on me. It was the best fucking experience of my life. And I really did leave like, oh, that's what a star looks like on stage with Mary Louise Parker. Like, I had never felt that kind of energy from someone on stage. And I was just like, oh, that's what it is. Okay, I get it. I get why she's famous. I get why she's cast in fucking everything. I would love to see her, even though she's way too old for the part, but she just played it again. I would love to see her in How I Learned to Drive.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, I'm a big Mary Louise Parker.
Yeah, I'm not mad at that. Yeah.
She's the only star I've ever seen on stage.
yeah, she keeps saying that, and I keep getting more and more jealous.
How does that make you jealous?
I want to be a star.
You can be a star.
I'm just being
I've only seen you on stage one time, CJ, and it was for a play I didn't like very much. Three guys, one group. I'm kidding.
I actually had that on my list of mind-blowing theater experiences that I've been in.
Tell us about it.
Well, I mean, I think I think I've been very lucky. Like, Fringe has had a lot of, like, really good memories for me. And Three Guys, One Groupon was definitely one. And also Night Witches was one. It was a play written about the Russian women that were in the bomber divisions that fucking killed Nazis. And the Nazis were scared of them. And I got to do a show with, like, three of my closest lady friends. And everyone loved us. And we won Best Ensemble at the end of Fringe. Well, Three Guys, One Groupon was like that, too. Just getting to go on stage to do a script that you love, that you really care about, with people that are just going to knock it out of the park with you. And everyone is there to support. Like...
Yeah, Three Guys,
One Groupon. It
doesn't
get any better than that to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Three Guys, One Groupon was a play written by me, produced at Sacred Fools for 2022 Fringe. It was nominated for Best Comedy, starring, directed by Rebecca Larson, C.J. Merriman, Lee Wolf, and Amanda Blake Davis. And it's
ABD.
One of the things I'm most proud of in my theater career. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. CJ, you also went to England and saw a bunch of plays.
My big one, I mean, I think I saw like 22 plays that summer. And yeah. I mean, certainly The Birthday Party on the West End is up there. Seeing Brian Dennehy in Death of a Salesman is up there.
Which Sarah Kane play did you see?
I didn't see a Sarah Kane play. We just covered her in my theater class.
Oh, and you read her on the beach.
Right. In Venice. Our shocking play that she took us to was Osama the Hero. Like, what we were talking about, the intimacy stuff before, she said she would normally take her class to a play that maybe has nudity or a sex scene in it, but there wasn't anything big going on that summer, so she took us to one that was hyper-violent. But the main thing that stuck with me from London was I saw Pericles at the Globe, and... The day before we went to see it, this was, again, part of my theater class, we went and did a tour of the Globe, and they took us in because they were doing, like, a final tech rehearsal before they were opening that night. And it was raining that day. And they took us into the theater, and they're like, you guys, if you're quiet, we can watch a little bit of their tech rehearsal. And they built a runway out into the middle of the pit where the groundlings stand. And they were using all kinds, they had like a Japanese drum section up in the heavens, but they were doing the storm at sea scene where Pericles is like screaming to the gods, and puddles had gathered on the stage, and people were like using the water on stage to make the shipwreck more real. And then to go back that night and see it, like, there was a bunch of assholes that were at the edge of the stage with us that had a fucking 30 rack of Keystone that they just sat it up on the stage, and they were cracking beers for the whole production, and it was just so much fucking fun. Go to London and see something at the Globe, no matter what it is. Just
I'm a really big fan of Oregon Shakespeare Fest. I've seen a lot of stuff at Oregon Shakespeare Fest, and a few of their productions really blew my mind. Specifically, the Comedy of Errors set in the Harlem Renaissance was absolutely incredible. And then I also saw a Beauty and the Beast, Disney's Beauty and the Beast, where they basically took all of the Disney imagery out of it. So there was no semblance of any character at all, except that Belle, I think, had a little blue ribbon or something. Besides that, and it was Belle and the Beast were both black actors, and it was one of the best things I've ever seen on stage. And I can't really describe it very well because it was so weird. It was kind of a tragedian's pulling things out of a box to tell a story type thing. But they made it kind of Pan's Labyrinth with the beast. He kind of looked like...
Did he actually look scary instead of a hot guy?
Yeah, he
kind of
looked
fur?
Like the fawn from Pan's Labyrinth. Like, he was like frightening. He was actually scary. And his back... had like the bones were crossing and coming out of his back, and the shirt was all ripped, and it was really intense. Scott, you got any other earth-shattering theater experiences?
I've got many, but I'm gonna save them. I think we've covered enough. And yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was just feel good, y'all.
Yeah.
Well, okay, cool. Let's get out of here then, because we don't really have anything else to do today. We can't rank everybody's stories. That'd be fucked up.
No, right?
Yeah, we're not going to do that. But why don't
I've got my top three.
I'm just kidding. Why don't we spotlight some LA theater?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
LA Spotlight.
Hey, the Circle X Theater Company has the West Coast premiere production of Do You Feel Anger? It's at the Atwater Village Theater. Circle X has been around for about 25 years. I know some of the founders of Circle X, but the play is getting nothing but buzz. And it's supposed to be pretty dark, but also pretty extraordinary in terms of performances and staging. So go check that out. Circle X on all social medias. Theater of Note, a 15-person play in a 48-seat theater, a political satire written in verse, a set full of moving pieces. We're not sure it can get much more unique than Nimrod, a tragically unpresidential comedy in verse. Come check it out. Tickets are going fast. Theater of Note in Los Angeles, in Hollywood. Another shout out to Ghost Road Theater, who's got a brand new show opening up next week at the Broadwater main stage. Check out Ghost Theater on all the social medias. Ghost Road Theater, excuse me. Ghost Road Theater, my apologies. And then finally, if you're in Stratford on Avon, Alex Kingston is playing Prospero in The Tempest at the RSC.
Yeah, it's no, not Los Angeles.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, if you are in Stratford. No,
DJ,
I
you got anything?
And so I thought it was cool.
Yes, friend of the pod and Three Guys, One Groupon cast member Amanda Blake Davis is directing Not Now at the Brick House Theater in North Hollywood, February 4th through March 5th, Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 3. That's the Brick House Theater in North Hollywood, y'all.
We should probably go to that.
Yeah,
we should go to that.
Yeah, we should go to that, and we should go to the Circle X show, and I'll go to the Theater Note show. What the hell?
Why not? Let's go to the RSC show. Okay.
Booking it now. Breaking out the credit cards.
And then I have one more. We've been interacting on Instagram with some local theaters, and I've been letting them know, like, hey, we want to support you. You don't have to support us, but we'll definitely support you. And I got reached out to by Open Book Theater Company, and they seem extremely nice and semi-new, but they have their spring cabaret coming up this March. It's March 19th in Carlsbad. You can get all of the info on their Instagram. It's at Open Book Theater Company, spelled T-H-E-A-T-R-E. Because they're a company who does theater.
I could argue about this forever.
Well, what is your argument here?
To
this
me,
is agreement with you.
I didn't know. I don't want to.
They're a company who does theater, the art form, T-H-E-A-T-R-E. I mean, yes. So what is the argument here?
Okay, sorry.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to slap you later. Ooh, violence. If you have something that you'd like to spotlight in LA theater, DM us on Instagram. We'll do it. Cool.
Yeah.
And but, I check the shit on Facebook, y'all.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us for Theater Theater. Join us again next week for my pick. It's... we're closing out. No, we have a couple more. We have a few more of these NBC Live musicals. This is a mini series that I have been doing for 2 seasons now, and we're almost done.
They're fun.
It is fun. So we're going to be watching Hairspray Live! Starring Jennifer Hudson and Harvey Fierstein. It also, there's a fun little Easter egg in here. Let's see if y'all can tell me what it is. It does also star Ariana Grande and Kristen Chenoweth. What's the Easter egg there?
I mean, I'm sure Kristen Chenoweth is a big theater person, but that's all I can pinpoint.
Ariana Grande is playing Glinda in Wicked, the movie.
Ah.
And Kristen Chenoweth originated the role.
That's fun.
Kind of fun. Anyway, so we'll get into all those kind of weird Easter eggs and shit on the Bailey pick, Hairspray Live. And then we got a Scott pick. We're doing a little Jonathan Demme, a little Talking Heads concert film, Stop Making Sense, with special guests Natalie Nicole Dressel and Jay Dutcher. That's going to be a frickin' blast. We're all watching it together in a couple weeks, and that's going to be super fun. And then after that, we're doing a 3-episode miniseries arc of Andrew Lloyd Webba. And I think we decided what we're covering for that, so we might as well announce here in the next couple, so people that can get into it and listen to the soundtracks, find the YouTubes, watch whatever they can. Siege, what's your pick?
I had to pick Phantom of the Opera. I had to.
Yeah, you gotta do it. OG. God, what was yours?
I went with Evita.
Evita, yeah. And I went for School of Rock.
Yes.
I want to discuss Starlight Express at least
a
little
bit. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it.
Or just make a Starlight Express joke at least.
In the second episode, we'll be doing the chronology, and we'll talk about all of them.
Yes, there we go.
That'll be super fun. But yeah, thanks. Siege?
Yeah, questions, comments, compliments. You can reach out to us via email, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Scott?
That was funny. Compliments? Thank
how
you,
I survive.
CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. And our theme song is better than your theme song.
Bitch.
He also writes all of our stingers, and he's an amazing human being. A big shout out to Pam Quinn, who isn't contributing to this episode, but is our fourth Beatle, our fourth member of the crew, and she writes our Insta theme song, and she writes other stuff, and she's a frequent contributor. And finally, to the great, brilliant playwright.
We don't need to thank Pam on the episodes where she didn't do anything.
Like hell we don't. Like hell we don't. I'm fighting you on that. I'm
love you, Pam, but like, fuck.
No, I'm gonna.
I feel like you said that while giving side eye to Pam. That's not even here.
I cut it out of the
Dear
out of the
Pam,
season four announcement.
Bailey just said that you. And finally, to the great, brilliant playwright, Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes.
I once found a nickel.
And it doesn't.
A chicken on it.
Can someone pass the wine?
And she doesn't even know it, but one day, Carol Churchill, we're gonna buy you a beer.
If anyone doesn't get that joke, the joke now is that Annie Baker used to write our podcast, but Carol Churchill has taken over. So when he introduces that Carol Churchill has taken over, we're just gonna do stupid non sequiturs. Not to diminish her,
you know,
to
you
that,
have to
but I'm just saying
a joke. It's not that good of a joke.
It's a good joke. I'm telling it now, and I won't ever explain again. But we made the joke off air, and now nobody would get it. Okay,
that's all we got.
That's all we got. Follow us on all the things. We appreciate you so much, and we'll see you next time. Here's my life.
Yeah. Have a great one.
Oh yes. Oh yes. Oh yes. Oh yes, they both. Oh yes, they both. Oh yes, they both reach for the gun, the gun, the gun. Oh yes, they both reach for the gun. Oh yes, oh yes, oh yes, they both. Oh yes, they both. Yes, they both reach for the gun, the gun, the gun, the gun. Oh yes, they both reach for the gun, for the gun. Oh yes, oh yes, oh yes, they both. Oh yes, they both. Oh yes, they both reach for the gun, 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 the gun. It's from Chicago.
Wow.
Later, everybody.
The theater, the theater. Sing out, Louis!
Theater, theater. To be or not to be. Theater, theater.